Welcome back to this interview with Esther Kish here on Born to Influence, all about masterminds and how it can help your success as an entrepreneur. Now we're ready with part two, where we talk about what you need to have in place to get your mastermind members to feel relaxed and safe. We talk about what we have to consider when facilitating a mastermind to really avoid building cages for ourselves. And we talk about paid versus free masterminds and what the pros and cons are for each. So let's get moving. And here is Esther.
Metta Muller.
And this is Esther Kish.
And you just caught the latest episode of Born to Influence, the marketing show.
How would you ensure sort of that kind of sharing? Because, we come from different industries, which also means a lot of the time we've got different values sometimes. We've got different ways of doing things. We've got different goals, of course. We've got a different knowledge system. We've got a different way of communicating sometimes as well. Depending on which industry we're in, right? I mean, the online world, you got so many acronyms for all kinds of stuff, and you know, it's super technical. In the fashion world, it's something else. So how would you ensure that knowledge sharing and that people who are so different, who come from such different backgrounds, really get something out of meeting other people without it clashing or without it just kind of being blah, because you know that they're talking two different languages almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there is a, for example, if you're using an acronym and you can reasonably expect that somebody from a different industry will know what that means unless they somehow happen to have experience with it. So, you know, if somebody has a question, let them ask that question and clarify, and you can just give a quick definition without feeling like you have to go into this whole big essay type of explanation where you have to explain everything from page one of the book, you know. You'll just, okay, this particular thing means this, like let's just say CTR means click-through rate, and that measures the how many mm-hmm. people click on your ads versus how many have seen it, like those kind of things. That is really quick. It took me, 10 seconds to explain, not even. Mm-hmm. And if that's enough when it's placed in the context of what is the bigger thing that we are talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that just because you gave clarification, it doesn't mean that you have to teach that person from now on, because that's not even what they asked for. They just want to be able to keep up with the conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what would you do? I mean, will you just sort of put people together and expect them to talk, or would you have presentations, or like what kinds of activities would you include in such a mastermind to really get the most engagement going?
But I think it's nice to have the presentation every once in a while. So let's, for example, let's say if it was a once a week kind of thing, then maybe once a month I would bring out an outside presenter. It might be a webinar from an industry leader on a topic that we all want to learn about. Or it might be an author of a book who comes and does a little presentation and talks about why he wrote the book and what is it that we can actually learn from this particular book. But I would keep that proportionately small to the free-flowing types of conversations of the other meetings. So it might be every other one or every third or every fourth, depending on what the group wants. But I want to make sure that it's really what we said it would be, a mastermind rather than a lecture that you come to, because then it becomes a class, you know, if every time you're having a presentation. So there needs to be room for those discussions. And if somebody wants to learn more about the particular, like let's say there was this author and he came and talked about how to hire people for your organization the right way. Okay, he did his presentation, we talked to him afterwards, there was some mingling, everybody went home. Now if I want to know more, I have the opportunity to talk to this person privately. Or if that person is really the right fit for the group, we might invite him to actually be part of the mastermind. But it doesn't mean that we have to have everybody else make them by force be interested in the same topic and have this person again and again. Because, again, then it becomes, you know, a series of classes rather than a discussion place.
And if you know, what do you see, if anything, that is missing at the moment, or at least sort of in your sphere of influence? What do you see is missing within the mastermind? What would you want to see more of?
I think it's a little bit of more fun and adventure, and yeah. You know, it's not always feasible, but it's something where you can go away on trips together, or you know, do zip lining, or maybe high flying trippies, like really serious and the fun part that you may not get.
What's zip lining?
Zip lining is, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes you see the telephone poles and they're connected by the wire. It's not phone poles, but it's like that kind of like a high. Something that the wire is connected on, and then you have this little instrument that, like, kind of like a piece of wood that you put across it, and you just can slide down. Like, sometimes you see it in the movies when the hero comes in and sweeps away someone.
Right.
You know, but they have those sometimes set up in a jungle or in a place that is pretty much in the wilderness, and you get to fly through, like literally zip through above a lake or above a river or above a valley in between the two peaks of two hills, or sometimes you're just connected to trees or to poles. So, you know, it has a high speed kind of like zipping through the air. So I would, you know, I would like to see that, those kind of fun and adventurous elements, but of course that's, you know, that requires a little bit more organization. So it may not be that you do it every month, but it could be that once a year or two times a year you have a special trip for members of your mastermind, where they might even bring their families along, and you might limit it to, say, 10 people. And at the same time, they're all people who already know each other and who can talk about business without being very formal or you know, very corporate. And and it allows you to have, because there is that energy of, while we are having fun, we are on a trip, there is also this all this creativity that sometimes comes about. And so at dinner, when you sit down, you're like, oh, by the way, you know what we're talking about? I just had an idea for you. So I think that's something that would be really, really cool.
Yeah, and it sounds like as well, I mean, it's needed for creativity as well, right? Because if we're just stuck indoors and, you know, four walls and a ceiling and a whiteboard or something like that, sometimes the energy gets a little bit stuck. Plus, it's not always the easiest way of creating rapport with people really fast, or sort of bonding with other people really fast. But I mean, a super engaging adventure trip can definitely make magic happen, I think. And that's when a lot of stuff happens. I remember when back in my nonprofit days, when I was facilitating lots of different workshops and so forth, and I got really sick and tired of the sit down workshops or the sit down presentations.
No, you didn't like that.
No, my goodness, it was so boring, and you could just see people like nodding off and, you know, just sitting there in their own thoughts on their mobile phones and so forth, and I just thought, what a waste of resources, and, you know, what a waste of space, and what a waste of time. And one way that we tried something different, which was it's still a little traditional, but we looked at what's, and I actually don't remember what it's, what the principal is called or who wrote the book. I'll have to find out. But he based, he created a certain sort of workshop style based on the fact that most things happen in the coffee break, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most things don't happen during presentations and, you know, formal discussions and so forth. They happen in the coffee break. So he created open space, that's what it's called. So he created this structure where you basically, you have little breakout groups and people can kind of come and go as they want to. And it's based on, if you're interested, stay. If you're not, then go and find another group. There are lots of different principles here. There's also that he has other ways of running workshops as well, where you're just pretty much just sitting in a big room and you start off brainstorming and just sort of, like, I think writing things down on a paper and putting them up and so forth. There are lots of different things going on, but the point of my story was that things happen during the coffee break.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, because I was just going to say too that although you can do the adventure trips every time, you can certainly have food there. And yeah. food has that kind of power, even if you just have you know, some soft drinks, but what, it makes you feel more relaxed. And so it's you know, it's not like, of course, if you have somebody doing an actual presentation, like how we talked about the, you know, the idea of bringing in an author and they might talk about the book that they just wrote, then you don't want to have people munching at the same time. I mean, you know, it's not a cabaret. But when it's the kind of situation where it's your group and there is no external guest invited, absolutely, why not make it, you could make it as informal as making it a dinner party. That could be a mastermind, too. It doesn't have to be that you're sitting at your office and having your little paper cup and your little paper plate and having a chocolate chip cookie, you know. It can be absolutely whatever you want it to be. That suits you as the host, that you feel like you're comfortable with it, and at the same time, the people that you attracted to this group, also it suits their style. Because it cannot be that it's only, that you're the one person that is running the thing because you're invented this particular group, and so you're the tyrant who gets to set the rules, but at the same time, you don't want to create a monster where it feels like it's a job for you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good reminder for people out there who are running masterminds or want to, or who are part of it, that allow it to, first of all, organically unfold, of course, but also constantly think about, well, is this, am I enjoying myself, you know, or am I sitting nodding off at all these boring presentations, or, you know, is it a job for me, or is it really a space where I get to expand and be creative and fully enjoy myself? So how do you make sure, what kinds of questions can we ask ourselves as the host to make sure that we aren't building cages and monsters for ourselves, and to make sure that we are being authentic in the way that we are sort of facilitating and guiding this this group or this mastermind?
I love this question. I think that for me, the first question is, okay, what kind of mastermind do I want to be in? And just to really put myself in my clients or members or whatever you want to call them, shoes, and say that, okay, what would they want? So then simply just asking myself that, okay, what do I want in a mastermind if I wasn't the host? I would make a wish list that this is what I want. I want to have the zipline trips. I want to have the dinner parties. I want to hang out with people who inspire me. They have to have a certain level of achievement. They have to have these kind of expertise, and I don't expect any one particular person to have all 15 of them, but maybe I'll have 15 people who each have one, you know, very, very specific skill set. I might want to have a lawyer. I might want to have an accountant. I might want to have somebody who is an expert in PPC ads. I might want to have a copywriter. I might want to have a retail specialist. You know, like people who I know that what is their strengths that they need to have, and they'll be looking for those kind of people when they're applying or when I'm sending out those invitations. And so just thinking as if I was a member of this group, what would really inspire me? Where would I want to go back all the time? And then bounce it off of the people that I'm first running the idea by as I'm creating this. Is this something that resonates with you? Because if nobody cares, then it might be a very nice idea in my head, but it's not going to actually ever take off. So really just to find out that what is it that is good for you as a member, and then see if it has traction. And really think about it. Okay, if this were really to happen, can I host it? You know? Because yes, I mean, you can find a space for it for sure, and or you can open up your home to whatever. Or, you know, if it's a very international group, then you may choose the conference calls or Google Hangouts, depending on how tech-savvy your crowd is. But is it something that is actually something that will work with my schedule, with all the other things that I'm doing? Because this is, don't forget, most of the time it's an addition to what you're already doing in your life and in your business. It's not that thing. So does it fit? Like if I'm looking to have, for example, let's just say, right, I live in LA. If for whatever reason, if all the people that I wanted to have happened to be in Europe, then I would have to make the adjustment timing-wise. If people are very international from all over, then I would have to find a place and a time that actually works for most people. And I know that I'll not be able to have everybody at every single meeting because it's just time zones are, you know, they have the tricky thing that sometimes it's the middle of the night for someone when it's convenient for most of the group. So looking at those logistical parts as well and taking that into consideration, and then figuring out the money part of it too. Do I want to charge for this? If so, how much? Mm-hmm. You know, because you might be running it for free, and then you need to be conscious of it, that if that's the case, then it has to be even better than if it was a highly paid mastermind.
Yeah.
Because if it's not, then you'll, you know, people just come because it's for free, but then it will very much water down the quality, and it will, you know, come out like the bakery meetings that I mentioned to you a while ago. They're pretty horrible. Yeah.
Exactly. And so how would you go about, again, as the host, how would you go about inviting people? Would you just, you know, shoot off an email and say, hey, you know, come join me here? Or what, like, what do you say when you invite people?
Oh, if I knew already exactly what I'm doing? Or I could have a really good idea?
Yeah.
Well, I would ask if they, for the first five or six people who I really, really wanted to have in the group, I would ask them that, hey, if I were to offer something like this, or if such a thing existed, what would you be looking for? And I would just get them, give me some feedback and give me their viewpoints of actually what it is that is attractive to them. Because remember when we talked about Keith Ferrazzi's group, book rather, the Never Eat Alone, and he was talking about anchor guests, and I know that we brought up that example in that interview, is having people who have a certain level of success, and you invite a few of those, then everybody else will want to come, maybe not because of you as a host, what you have put on the table so far, but because there are all these other people as well. And so to get those people first, you need to find out from them that what is it that is really appealing to them, and say that, hey, if so-and-so were part of it, would you be interested potentially in attending? And then you'll get the feedback. And you figure it out. And it might be that, hey, yeah, but maybe I would be very much interested, but not this year, or you know, not for another 3 months. And that will give you also a little bit of a guidance of, okay, what is your timeline? When do you want to launch this thing? Because if you start, you can start small. You can start with two or three people, and it eventually grows. It's absolutely possible. But for me, I would like to start with a core group of five or six people that are really inspiring, and then the rest will fall into place because that core group is so attractive to people who are not part of it yet that they want to be there. So it has those elements of social proof as well that, hey, if those people are there, maybe I should be there too.
Right. So I'm hearing two things here. The first thing is that you're not sort of just throwing a cold invitation out to people. You are engaging them by asking them, by checking out, is this interesting, you know, is this something you have time for, and so forth. The second thing is that you start out with a core group, with sort of a really attractive core group that is going to be part and parcel of also attracting other people. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And again, there is another way to go about it, like the mastermind that we were referring to a little while ago that I'm part of. I know that they started with just four people. And they were friends already, and they were all in similar businesses, not the same business, but related to each other. And so they were truly able to help each other. And then it started. But again, it essentially was a core group, because four people is already large enough that it's like, oh, if those guys are there and they all have these eight-figure businesses, can I get in? Can I come? You know? Mm-hmm.
So because I'm part of a mastermind as well. We're five people in that mastermind, and I absolutely love it because it's a very sort of it's a handpicked group of people, and we're very similar mindset wise and value wise and so forth. So it's a little different than a mastermind where you're really getting together a lot of different people. This is where we've got the same sort of value system and way, you know, view of the world and view of business and so forth. And we're very interested in keeping it small, of course. So how do you grow? Like, how do you move from your core group where you've really got some established ways of doing things and you've got, like, you know, you're kind of getting nice and tight and so forth? How do you begin to grow and expand that group without sort of messing with that juice that you've created with the core group?
Right. So there is a tricky balance there, because there is the dynamic and that energy of people who have known each other for a longer time, and they've been, you know, the original founders of this group, or they had this kind of a history together. Maybe they didn't know each other as friends from before, but they came together at the very first meeting, and there will be always that little bit of an energy that, well, I'm the real you know, group member.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to make it. Yeah. But at the same time, you don't want to make it clique-ish. You know, you don't want to make it like everybody else doesn't feel included, because, you know, that doesn't feel good to anyone, not to the person who just tries to enter. It's kind of like being the new kid in the class kind of thing. And then it's also not nice for the people who always feel like, well, I can talk about it, and we were talking about creating a safe space, and, well, you know, that person is new, and now I don't really want to share what is going really on in my business when I'm having an issue. So I think that it's important to be open-minded, and, you know, like some groups that I've been part of, they actually had a voting system. They would say that, okay, the new person only can come through referral, and they have to make a pitch to the whole group, and they would email everybody that, hey, this is my introduction, and this is why I want to be part of this group. And then everybody else would have to make a vote of, do I want this person in or not? Now, in theory, it sounds really nice. It really didn't work in practice, I have to say that.
Right.
Because
I can imagine.
Because so-and-so referred this person, I don't want to hurt their feelings, so I'm just going to say yes. And it kind of became like an automatic yes, even though it was just a formality. So if you really want to have the kind of a voting system, then I think that it's important to keep the integrity of the idea of voting, and it should be anonymous, and it, you know, and that person might actually have to come to a particular group or do a video rather than an email introduction, because I never felt comfortable judging a person just because they wrote 5 sentences about themselves and why they want to be there. I never met them. I have no idea who they are, and, you know, like, so that really didn't work. But I mean, if you are that, really one of your goals is to keep the group small and very, very exclusive and very selective, then it might be that there is this thing where people actually have to be allowed to be part of the group. But, you know, then you don't want to come into the situation where it's groupthink anymore, you know, where you're swayed by, okay, if so-and-so is kind of about to vote and leaning, it becomes a whole bureaucratic organization, and it feels like it's almost like a political thing rather than trying to help each other with your business. So I would just rather just keep it very simple. See if the person who is about to come in, do they qualify? Do they meet the criteria of what we actually wanted in this group, to what this group stands for, what the members are looking for? And that might be something that, by the way, that gets updated every so often. Maybe once a year you do your survey and find out what is it that people are looking for now. And then see if the new person meets that criteria and what can they contribute to the group. So it's, part of it, you want to know what they are looking to get out of it, but also what can they bring to you.
I love that. And I've, you know, our time is slowly running out here, but I do have one final question for you. If you had already gathered your core group of your most, you know, favorite people, and that, of course, said yes and so forth, and you were to start your mastermind tomorrow, what exactly would happen?
The first meeting, I think it would be a really fun one, just to get to know each other.
So what would you do?
You know, it might be that going out to dinner, or it might be an actual, I wouldn't start probably with an adventure trip, but some kind of a setting that is very informal, so people can feel comfortable with getting each other, to know each other as people, rather than, okay, here's a set of business issues, let's tackle it. So I would make it a little bit, or I might do it where it's, you know, it's a meeting the next day, but the day prior there is a dinner or a cocktail party or something where it's a little bit more informal, and it's more about making those connections.
All right. Well, Esther, thank you so much for joining me here and giving all your valuable tips and tricks for people who want to start masterminds, or people who are in masterminds and want to change things up a little bit. So thank you, Esther. And
thank you. I have actually a question for you too.
All right.
So what would you want to see in a mastermind?
Well, I mean, for me, I like it, and, you know, I'm a very sort of sensitive introvert, so I quite like it when it's small. So I'm not much for the bigger groups, but I think for me, it's really about that I'm in a safe space where people have similar values as me and where I really do not feel that I'm being judged. I think that is, it's so incredibly important for me that I'm able to be 100% honest and vulnerable as well without feeling that I'm losing my power. So for me, it's not so much, and you know, I love the in-person stuff as well. I'm actually going on a trip tomorrow.
Yeah, I know.
8 a.m. in the morning to be with my own mastermind, and we're sort of doing a little bit of a retreat at our host's own place. And like I said, we're only just 5 people, and we're just kind of we're going to be hanging out there, doing a lot of strategy work, getting in depth, and so forth. And that for me is absolutely perfect. I would love to see as well, like you mentioned, doing fun stuff together. I mean, for me, I love the ocean, right? So anything on a boat is perfect for me. I'm not so much for evening stuff or like cocktail parties. So, but anything in nature and then anything on the ocean would definitely do it for me. And I quite like the fact that I quite like the mix of both online, so that you can, you know, sit in your PJs and talk to each other without really having to go through the hassle of traffic or travel and so forth, combined with, you know, a couple of times a year where you do meet in person and where you do some great stuff together, whether it's just simply meeting at someone's house for a more in-depth sort of professional retreat where you really get you know, down and dirty into all of your strategies and your business and so forth, as well as something more light and fun. So I think that mix for me would be perfect.
That's really good to know. So here is my first officially my market research started. I know what
exactly.
You know. Love it. All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Esther, and I'll see you very soon again.
Bye.
So, influencer, are you ready to start your own mastermind? Well, let us know your thoughts and ideas on our Facebook page over at facebook.com/born to influence. We'd love to hear what your takeaways were from this episode. And perhaps Esther has some great suggestions for you too, if you tell us your ideas. So that's facebook.com/born to influence. We'd love to see your face and voice over there. And don't forget to tune back in on Monday, same time, same place.